Yeah. Hey, everybody. What's going on? Trent McClellan here, returning with another episode of the Generators Podcast. Yeah. Thanks for tuning in and listening. And I hope you're having a fantastic week and stuff. What's going on, everybody? Hope you're good. Recording this intro today in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, Earth. I'm doing well, feeling good about me, feeling good about things, embracing the uncertainty that is our daily lives currently. And this is it. This is how things are going to be for a while. So we all just got to get used to it. And that's what I've been doing. Trying to enjoy some summer. Because as I mentioned before, with everything else going on, you can tend to focus on all this other stuff. And then you realize, like, this good weather, if you're in Canada, you realize you only have a certain window of shorts weather. Of times when you can wear a tank top. Of times when you don't look outside and go, oh, dear Christ. No. So you got to take advantage of it. So that's what I've been trying to focus on lately, is getting out and enjoying the weather's been pretty good here in Calgary. Today is another beautiful day. Mid-20s Celsius, that is. And trying to take advantage of it, man, because as we know, in Canada, that day will arrive when suddenly a leaf or two starts to change. Okay? Another day you're out. You're like, what's that on the ground over there? Is that leaves? Yeah. Yeah, it is. And you know, it has begun. The process of packing up and rolling up the summer and transitioning into fall, or the much more beautiful word, autumn. So that's coming. So get out there and enjoy you some summer in a safe way. Okay? You always get everything you say now has to have that at the end of it. Okay? Get out there, ride your bike in a safe way with social distancing. Okay? Get outside, enjoy a sandwich in a park while wearing a mask. Everything's got to have that at the end of it. That's the footnote now. Safety. Be good. So that's where my head's at. I don't know where you guys are mentally, emotionally, physically. Last week I went to the gym for a few workouts, which is my first time doing that since probably February. And it was nice to get back and actually have full workouts and have the ability to, what is wrong with me today? I'm going to start this again. It was nice to actually go to a gym and be able to utilize various pieces of equipment. It was kind of nice to do that. But I found my body crashed at the end of the week because I just wasn't used to doing that. Such is life in your late 40s. What are you going to do? But it was good to get back into it. And started to feel like a little bit of normal again. Of course, now you have to book an appointment to go to the gym, not to go to a class, just to go in the gym itself. You have to schedule an appointment for an hour, and that's all you get, 60 minutes. Go in, crank it out, and get out. So it's kind of weird having a gym appointment. You know, you're used to a dental appointment, a doctor's appointment. For some of you out there, a court date. But anyway, it's weird to have to go to the gym at an exact certain time. Because as a comedian, especially during the summer months, I just go to the gym when I feel like going. So often I'll try to go during, you know, non-busy times. And it's one of the benefits that no one tells you about when you're a comedian, is that ability to have certain aspects of the city to yourself and certain facilities, you know. So now I have to book a time, and I got to be there at that time. If I show up late, I only get the rest of that hour. So anyway, it's a new way of doing things, and I understand why they're doing it, but it does take some adjusting too. Anyway, time to set up this episode of TGP, the Generators Podcast. Wow, this guy, my guest this week is Nathan McIntosh, who I think pound for pound is one of the funniest comedians out there. And I met Nathan, man, I don't know, maybe a decade ago, originally from Nova Scotia. And super funny guy, hilarious, a good dude as well, just a nice, nice guy. And this episode is really just us catching up. We hadn't spoken in years. I think maybe last time I'd seen him was probably at the Halifax Comedy Festival a couple of years back. And Nathan's one of those guys that, like, when we get together and we start just riffing and messing around, like, we will go into fits of laughter just in each other's company, just kind of, you know, just talking shit about whatever, and then we just start snowballing and going. And so he's one of those guys that makes me laugh hard off stage, but also his stand-up is killer, man. He's one of the best. He moved to New York City a bunch of years ago and has been making quite a name for himself, doing a bunch of the late-night shows, Conan, Stephen Colbert. He's been on that show, and a couple of others, and just done really well. He's got a great work ethic, great attitude about the business, hustles, and has incredible talent. So, again, and such a good dude, and you love when talented people, but even more importantly, good people have good things happen for them. And he's risked a lot and invested in himself and taken some chances and gone on to do some great things. And I think we'll just continue to do that. So anyway, this is my conversation with my buddy Nathan McIntosh.
I'm good, man. I just caught a glimpse of myself in the camera. I look insane. I gotta get the top cut. I can do the sides myself, but the top, Jesus, the top was rough. I knocked over the stove. The top is a problem. The back, I mean, the sides are fine, but yeah, this looks wild. But I'm good. How are you, Trent?
Good, man. Good. I didn't have the same problem because I've been shaving this thing since '92.
So oh wow.
I was not affected by the lack of hair cutting. You know?
What brought that on? What song in 92 made you shave your head? What was the big...
Dude, this is so... I mean, you're from the East Coast. You totally get this. So we, a bunch of us in university, six guys sharing a house, which shouldn't be legal. That shouldn't be legal to have six guys all under the age of 20 living in a home. Who rents that? Who's like, that should be fine. Yeah. I'll be your landlord. And so anyway...
Full zookeeper, just brown suit, poking people back in a house.
Yeah, good. Take it. There's no paperwork. Just get the ring. it's like, you must have been, now looking back, I'm like, how desperate was this landlord? Like, these are people that live in my home. And we're just doing one of those weekend drinking things, you know, university. And one of the guys buys a set of clippers. And so drinks start flowing. It's like, hey, you know what would be a great idea? And then it says all of us taking turns shaving. and that was it. I woke up, the other guys woke up going, oh, what have I done? And I woke up and went, I kind of dig this. This is kind of doable. So that was it.
But the That's other hilarious.
Guy, yeah.
The so other you can guy, so you're, you can grow hair. You're,
I can you're, grow hair. Yeah.
This is a, okay.
I'll do it right now. I'll do it
I
right
like
now.
It. This is like one of those things you get a tattoo when you're 18, you got to live with it. But you know what I mean? You just, yep. I got my head shaved when I was 18 because some five other psychos told me I should. And hey, it's working out.
My hairstylist was a 18-year-old drunk sociology student. And I went, you know what? I trust his judgment. I trust his judgment.
I will tell you this. I mean, I've only known you with no hair. It's great. You got a perfectly shaped head for it. It's great. You made a good decision, Trent.
Well, you know, like things you decide in your youth, you know, they stick around. It's like, you know, you can have bad credit. You can do a lot of things that just follow you around. And, you know, who knew hairstyles were one of those things. So,
dude, when I was 16, right, I wanted a tattoo like real bad. And I wanted to get, not even knowing that it was a company, I wanted to get the Apple logo with a bite taken out of it and have Mac written underneath just because of my name, solely because of my name. And I fought with my mom. My mom was like, you're not getting that. That's completely insane. But dude, you know, if only a mother had been in that house at that point in time, I might be looking at a guy with like a, you know, a faux hawk or a full mullet. But again, this is a beautiful decision. I'm so happy that my mom didn't let me do something stupid like that at 16. Jesus, 16.
Well, dude, I remember when, remember the band Platinum Blonde? Remember that band? Yeah. Like, doesn't really matter, all that stuff. So that was the big days of like the big hair, and people were putting, guys were putting hairspray and stuff in there, like the heavy, it was like rock hair, but these guys were a softer pop band. And I wanted hair like that. So here I was trying to comb out my afro, trying to get it to flatten. And it's resistant, Nathan. That type of hair, not easily pliable. Not really, you know, something you can shape easily with just a comb you bought at a gas station. You're like, yeah, no, I'm going
to. Irving Big Stop comb.
And I remember being so frustrated. Like, I just want to be in Platinum Blonde. And I just, you know, it didn't happen. And I got to live with that for the rest of my life. But so, dude, like, you're in New York. How many years have you been in New York City now?
Oh, nine.
Really?
Yeah, I know, man. September is nine years.
Insane. I remember here in Calgary, just shortly before you left, we were out, me and you and Brendan McKeegan were just blowing around town, just having a great time. You were running into famous wrestlers and shit.
Oh, yeah, I forgot you were there. Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah, man, we went to, because Brendan's obviously, well, I mean, obviously, he's a big Bret Hart fan. And he was like, he goes, dude, we got to go to Hart House. I go, okay. But he's like, I think you were taking us, and you were like, let's go get breakfast first at Humpty's. And we're sitting at Humpty's, and I'm like, that's Bret Hart. We're the only people in the restaurant, you, me, Brendan, and Bret Hart, another guy. So we went over and talked to him. He was a super nice guy. I remember Brendan said to him, he goes, hey, man, I was just going to go to Hart House. And Bret Hart's like, oh, yeah, I've heard of it. It's funny.
I don't get anything from that. I don't get anything from that. But, yeah.
And then we took a picture. But, yeah, that's a while ago, man. Jesus, yeah. That's a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're just close to a decade. Like, that was insane because it was just before you were getting ready to leave, I guess. You would have been here in the summer maybe or something.
Yeah.
And like, so dude, what the thing now, like with lockdown and all that stuff, like New York obviously was crazy. Like it was like the hardest hit of any place it seemed. What was it like when all that stuff first went down like a few months ago?
You know, honestly, have you ever been to Africa? Any parts of Africa?
No. Why would you ask that?
That's hilarious.
Have you ever been to Scotland?
I haven't, and I want to go. My grandfather, Wendy, brought me a back of tie. And thank you for knowing that my background is Scottish. Everybody assumes Irish. Everybody, just because I have red hair and I grant wishes. This is what I'm going to tell you. So when I went to South Africa, you look around and you go, oh, man, we've only ever, which we all should have known this anyway, we all only ever see the worst parts of Africa. On this side of the earth, the only thing in Africa is one kid wearing, you know, this cloth over his business, right, by a tree, crying. That's it.
Right.
Then you go to Africa and you're like, they have everything. Of course they do. Many countries built up cities. So this is what I'll tell you about New York as well. When you see the news, right, and they just show you dead bodies piled in trucks and Targets on fire, I go outside and it's fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's people in the world. It was like, was it Meghan McCain was talking about her neighborhood and how like it's Armageddon, whatever, and someone blew her up on Twitter, was like, I live in the same building. It's fine.
it's fine. Yes. Exactly. It was like, I mean, my mom lives in Miramichi and New Brunswick and she went through the exact same thing that we had to go through. She's calling me every day being like, you gotta wait in line for Sobeys. If it's happening in Miramichi, you know what I mean, it's happening all over the place. Miramichi's like six people and a couple of hockey sticks, you know, there's not much going on.
Population. That's a pretty diverse population. Like, that's six human beings. And then we got a couple of hockey sticks. I mean, that's
a couple of CCMs. I mean, just a little hockey stick waiting in a line to go into Sobeys. But a
couple of Titans.
But I mean, as far as I guess, like numbers wise, yes, New York was one of the like the worst part of America, which is also the worst country at this point, right. Which is hilarious. You know, you think the worst country would be where it started, but America looks at that and goes, no dice. We will beat that by 1,000,000%. And they did.
Yeah. Dude, you know what it's like? This just came to me as you were talking. It's like, especially in the comedy world, you ever like work with comedians and then someone will ask you how that person was and you're like, oh man, great dude, or she was awesome or whatever. And then someone else has a different experience with that person. They're like, oh my God, that person's a dick. I didn't get it. And it's like, you can't really base it on anyone else's opinion. Like you have to literally experience that person for themselves. Cause like, well, maybe you were a dick to them and that's why they were a dick to you. Like, I don't take anyone's opinion anymore. I'm like, at least I need to experience it and go, okay, I have my own kind of calibration for it.
Yeah, that's the part of being somewhat of an adult, you know, not just jump to the conclusions of people wearing big jeans. Can we say this? We're two comedians talking. There's no worse dressed people on this earth than comedians. There just isn't. There's no worse dressed people. Garbage shoes, laces tied too tight, shirts that don't fit, T-shirts with like some disgusting logo on it. Some of the ugliest dressed people on this earth with opinions, Trent. Here's how the government should run. Buddy, you look like you hang out in a dumpster behind Arby's. How in the fuck is anybody supposed to take this seriously? Get some clothes that fit.
Dude. I went to pick up a comedian once at the airport and I showed up and I went in and this person was just like had like a long pea coat on but then like a t-shirt with stains on it and then had like the gray like jogging pants with the shoes untied and I was like oh my God, what happened? Did the plane go down halfway through the flight and you just grabbed whatever? And dude, 5 years later, I flew somewhere. I went in the bathroom. I looked at myself in the mirror and I was that guy. I was like, how did it happen?
That's hilarious.
It became like, it just happens just over time. Like this is comfortable. This should be good to fly in.
It's like Lord of the Flies mentality, you know what I mean? You don't think you're going to smash a guy in the face with a rock, and then you know, you're on that island, you know?
Picking up a rock, and you're just testing the weight of
it. I've definitely been coming into a hotel, and I look at myself, and I go, Jesus Christ, why did I? I try to be very conscious of it, though, because when I look around, I'm like, man, you look terrible. We look terrible. What the hell are we trying to prove here?
What is my objective as I go up here on this stage? And would anyone listen to someone who's dressed like me, who clearly has put no effort into what I've thrown on?
Yep.
Why?
That's the exact, yes.
Is this a hoodie? Am I in a hoodie right now? I am in a hoodie.
I am on a hoodie on television wearing big jeans because I'm an artist and all that matters is words. Psychotic human beings. We're broken people.
Well, that's the whole concept too, right? Of you see a lot of celebrities, it's starting to change now, I think, where, you know, you can just be a dick and not be nice to people and people go, well, he is really talented. So we all just got to look the other way. It's like, I think those days are numbered. Like people are eventually going, no, he's a jerk and I don't want to work with people who are jerks. I don't care how talented they are. Like there's a reckoning of that right now, you know?
Sure. I think there's only a couple of people who are that talented anyway that could get it. Like, this is me personally. Jamie Foxx is in there, and I'm not saying he is a dick, but if there were stories with Jamie Foxx, you go, look, dude, he's one of the most talented people this planet's ever seen. Like, easily. Yeah. Top 10, probably most talented human beings alive currently, right now. I'd put Jim Carrey in there.
Yeah.
And now I'm at a loss. Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke's also 106 years old. So if he's going to tell you to fuck off at an airport terminal, he can also dance. So just eat that.
Exactly. Well, you had to have so many hats back in the day to be like, you know, like the Sammy Davis Juniors of the world and stuff. And it's like, it's like, yeah, they were like, yeah, but I get it that he was, yeah, he wasn't very nice at the craft services table. I get that. But, you know, we can't find another Sammy.
And, exactly.
I mean, and this show's got to go. I mean, we got the green light. And I think those days are few and far between now of people. And it was the old adage. I mean, we all had it coming up in stand up of you get in a car with another comedian and you're with this guy for 5 days driving to like Kelowna and wherever. And you're like, oh, my God, I got to put up with this guy for 5 days. Like, no one cares how funny you are. They're just like, is he a good dude? Is he going to pay for gas as well? Is he like,
for sure, yeah, yeah.
Smoke in the car for the whole trip? Like, all these things mattered, right?
No, of course. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course. But if you were driving, let me tell you, and let me ask you this. If you were driving with Sammy Davis Jr. to Kelowna, right, and he wanted to smoke and do whatever, I mean.
I'd be lighting the cigarettes. I'd be like, yeah, no, these
exactly.
are.
Exactly.
Sammy, yeah. You know what?
That's what I mean. He's so talented.
Give me one of those. Yeah, I think I should, this is. Oh, I get it. This is, I feel more creative. Just
put on the window. Let me yell at that woman real quick.
Hey, let me pull over and see if I can dance. This is
but yeah, no, you're right. If you, the whole, you got to be right now for sure. You got to be beyond the realm of talented to even get away with kind of minor infractions.
Yeah.
So if you're pulling major ones, yeah, I mean, it's a wrap.
It is done for you. It's a really weird time. I don't know how you are too, but like, I've been thinking about this more over the last bunch of years. I used to love the road. I used to love packing the bags. It's going to be hotels. I find that way harder now. Like I miss my home. I miss being home. I miss the stability of like a routine. And I didn't think I'd ever get sick of it. I love the shows and I love performing. And I love that hour on stage and I love meeting people and all those things. But the whole, like, I got to get to the airport. I got to wait. The flight is delayed. You might lose my bag. I got to get to the thing or whatever. All that stuff just wears me down. Where are you with the road right now? Are you okay? I can do this. Or do you hit that wall too of like, oh shit, I gotta.
I think I'm in that same sort of, spot, man, of like, it'd be great to do it a lot when people want you to do it a lot. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you're like, if you can go somewhere and do, which you can, I've seen you do it. I've messaged you about it. You can go into a city and do a theater of 600-700 people. That's the move. Yeah. You know what I mean? Below that, it gets tough after a while. Yeah. I've just like, I don't want to eat Wendy's.
Yeah. No, I know.
You know what I mean? At 12 at night. I don't want to, like, getting on a plane is cool for a while until it's your full job. You do it to, you know, didn't it suck when you're at the airport and you're like, oh, fuck, I got to get another plane. And some stupid family bounces down the, you know, the terminal with their little water wings and a noodle. And they're like, we're going to go on a trip. I mean, there's just two giant juxtapositions of who's in there. I need to travel. You're doing this because it's a fun time.
Right. Yeah, I know. I feel too, like, dude, I used to do like 6 weeks straight. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Leave Calgary and then go to Eastern Canada and like Ontario for like a month and a half.
Absolutely. I've done that. Yeah. It's tough after a while, man.
Oh, man. And like, you're right. Can I have another club sandwich? I don't think I can. You know what I'd
I know.
Like? I'd like to make my own toast. I'd love to have some peanut butter. Toast and I've done that to a server. Just, you know what I would like is my own bed and
just crying.
He's like, I got other tables.
Have you ever gone to eat at a restaurant by yourself on the road and they're sad for you? Have you ever felt that? Yeah. I walked into a Friendly's in Pennsylvania. Friendlies, by the way, Friendlies.
Great name.
I walk in and the woman goes, how many? I go, just me. She goes, one? I go, yep. She goes, aw.
I'm gonna take my 15 right now. He's got no
yeah.
one. Carl, he's got, he's no, got one.
No one. Imagine turning to the restaurant. Is there any way that you can put him in a booth, maybe a pull-up chair? I mean, he's alone. It's a Friendly's. Just that, aw.
Dude, you'll love this. I went to see a therapist once, and I was like talking to them, and I'm just like, you know, talking about like my life up to a certain point. And I go, yeah, so I don't know, man. And that's, you know, that's where I am. And he looked at me and he went, really? And I went, that's not what you want to hear.
Absolutely.
You know, from someone who's, I've heard it all. Like, that's like,
yep.
No, I've not heard that. And that, wow, I got to check the binder. I got to see what we got.
You're telling me you ate at a Friendly's by yourself.
Okay.
Wow. That's deep. That's dark.
That is new low. That is, that's the thing I've talked to other comedians about. When someone comes up to you after a show and goes, dude, loved your show. I want to be a comedian. Do you have any advice? No one ever tells these people those things about, do you like eating alone all the time?
Do you like living up here?
Anyone else for about 14 hours until you're on stage? Can you handle that? Because that's what's going to happen.
Punta Inn. Yeah, I know. It's just in a Red Roof Inn on the side of a highway. Are you okay with that?
Are you
your life?
And when you get to the next place of so-called employment, that they may not be able to pay you, and you may need to find a way to get to the other town to meet another person who's got a bunch of issues that you're going to have to deal with in a car for 5 days.
That reminds me, one time I was in a car with a guy. We were going 6 hours from Toronto to Montreal. And man, I never met this man before. Very nice man, but dude, about an hour into the trip, this is what I would do when I was like younger. I would sort of just let the person I've been doing it longer and was older, they run the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whatever they want to do, whatever you want to talk about, I'm in. I'll just listen.
Yeah.
This guy, about an hour in, man, started talking about his divorce and wept for 5 hours Oh my God, man. It was a lot, dude.
You're like, you want to get some chips?
Just passing on routes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, what can I do? You know, but I'm not going to pull over and be like, you got to get your fucking shit together.
Yeah.
It's not my business, but
did
like.
You want to do 25 to start or?
Yes, I'll do 10 or whatever, you know, I'll sell your merch, I guess, after.
You're all about the show. It's just.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, like, cause no other job is like, you're going to get in a vehicle with a stranger. You may even share accommodations. You might actually be in the same hotel room and you're not going to know anything about them. And by the way, we also expect you both to have a good show. We expect you to show up with each other's stuff for five days, chain smoking and his love of heavy metal, death metal music.
Yes.
And so how'd it go? How'd you do? How was the week? Well, you couldn't complain to anybody. You couldn't, there was no HR to talk to. Like, I'd like to fill out some paper.
There's nobody to go to. Let me ask you this, Trent. How many doctors do you think there'd be if they had to go through what we, the same deal?
Yeah.
You want to be a doctor? Okay. Look in the paper, find a place where you can doctor for 5 minutes, and they might not let you doctor. You put your name on a list and they might call your name to doctor, or drive 9 hours to put somebody's arm back on with some other psycho, you know? It's just like,
It's open doctor night.
Insanity.
Open doctor night, and we put the names in a hat.
Anybody has an ailment, get up here, and one of these open doctors will come up. Hopefully they can do it, you know.
You've got the bullet. You're the bullet doctor. And I mean that. We've got a gunshot wound.
There's the doctor walking up on stage sucking a bullet out of somebody's arm.
And you're not going to get paid for it. Like, that's just to see if you've got any doctoring ability.
Oh, you'll get paid in years. Years. Oh, this I was going to say, when people come up to you after a show and they say like, hey, I'm thinking about getting into comedy, you can tell which of those people are going to and which are not based on what they say. You know, like anytime anybody after a show brings up money to me in terms of when they first start comedy, you're like, okay, dude, I don't understand why people don't know what stand-up is. Like, I never thought about money at the beginning at all. Like, not at all. How can you? It's you're writing. Look at this. This you write down insanity on paper and then scream it. I just threw that. Scream it at strangers. This is complete magic. How the fuck do you think you're going to make money at this? Definitely right away.
Dude, the on top of that, I've had guys come up and go, yeah, it was pretty good. How much you make doing this anyway?
Yeah.
I make about 170 grand a year now. So, I mean, I know I could do what you do. I just got to see if the numbers work.
Anybody that talks money right away is never going to do none of this. Not one piece of it. Like, that's just, I make 170 grand now. Just blow yourself, you know? Jesus Christ.
Well, I love that their thought process, like, as they're watching your show, they're sitting there and they're going like, yeah, I'm pretty funny. I could definitely do this for sure.
Yeah.
Just a numbers racket. I just gotta crunch the numbers.
Like if you come into it being like, as long as it's stable, as long as I have stability, you're like, dude, do you understand what this is? Do you have any idea what you, have you ever looked at this? Have you ever even looked half a second at people that have done this before you? Do you understand what your stable?
Doctoring. How much do you make doctoring anyway?
Being a drug dealer, I think, is more stable. That's a more stable career choice.
Well, dude, that's like with this whole thing with like zero shows. Like it was really weird the first couple weeks of this thing where I'd have moments where it would hit me where I'd be like, oh, my profession no longer exists. Like, just like.
Yeah, I know.
I was like four shows into a tour that was going to be like 23 shows across the country. And then it was like, oh no, this is not a thing anymore that you can do in the world. Like I had a couple freak out moments. Did you have any of that where you're just like, oh, it's gone. The thing you knew and put your life into ceases to exist.
Of course. And I'd hope that, cause I've asked this to other people too, just for my own sort of sanity, because it seems like some people don't have that thought. It seems like some people are just walking around going, well, when it comes back, you're like, But what do you mean? Is that a thing? I mean, we're the last group, like entertainment people, live entertainment. We're going to be the last group that will be to get normal again. I mean, it could be a year, maybe. I don't know. So, yeah, man, I've had the same thought. And then you just sit there panicked in a room like, oh, my God. So everything I've done up to this point is useless. And I now have to start a brand new career. Once what, we're done eating people or whatever in the streets? Like, how do you salvage something out of this? Yes. Like, you know.
I like, too, how, like years ago, dude, like, when I don't know, I was probably 5 years into stand-up and probably like you where you're kind of like your career seems to be climbing and you're like, yeah, I'm doing all these things. And then I just hit a wall where, like, had no money, excuse me, tons of debt. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I'm working hard and I have no money to show for it. And I had to kind of like think about going back into the real world. So I found, I think, a floppy disk with my with my resume on it. And I started like going, well, I guess I should probably tidy this up just in case. And then I realized like there's a gap of 5 years where you go into a business and they're like, so you just give your opinion to people? And why would we need that here? Like, what, Craig?
Why would we need that here?
This guy gives his, like, it was like, I was like, oh, I have no employable skills.
I know, dude. Yeah. And that's funny because we've only gone farther now into that. You know what I mean? More of a, it's a bigger gap. Oh, so you're telling me before the whole world fell apart, you were doing what?
What?
One thing that's interesting about that, though, is that, you know, not trying to, like, send some kind of crate. Without the people that make things, though, what would people have done during all this time? Like, people that write music, shows, movies, stand-up, all that type of thing. Like, imagine if nobody had gone into the life that they know is insane to go after the more stable things. Then people, what? What are you? You're going to sit in your house for 4 weeks watching accountants on Netflix? You know what I mean? Just accountants at their desks? you need this, but nobody respects it, and everybody thinks you're insane to do it, but they all, people go to movies, people go to concerts, like, it's real interesting that it's what people do to get their minds off of things, but they hate everybody that does it, and you're a goddamn loser.
I know.
It's just so weird.
Dude, I remember going to the bank to try and get a loan when I, like, you know, early years of being a comedian, and they're like, okay, and employment? And I'm like, stand-up comedian. And they would go, I'll put other, because that's not on the scroll down list.
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay. And what type of, so you just do the, okay, well. Yeah, no, we don't get a lot of, you know, like it was like, I'm like,
totally.
Wasting your time. Like we're not, there's no sense sending that in, right? Like you're
not. It's got to go to Mr. Bank, just a guy with a monocle and a bag of money. And he reads, excuse me. Comes out of his office. What do you want? Who do you want me to? What? You want me to give 10 grand to who? A comedian? What are you, stupid? Monocle back on, waddles back into his office.
Guy got paid in chicken wings for 3 months. I realized the look on her face. It was the first time, because I'm like, this is my job and this is what I do. And yeah, I don't make a ton of money, but it's a job. And I was taking it seriously, but the look on her face was exactly what you're talking about. It was like, oh, you poor man. Like as if I had been living under a bridge. I'd come in and said, hey, you know, I'd never looked at it that way until she looked at me.
I mean, we're very, it's stupid as it is, because like, we're obviously not, but we're real off the grid, you know, in terms of a regular type society thing. But again, that woman there takes her kids to what? Movies. Who writes those? Comedians. So enjoy that. You know what I mean? But again, the whole thing comes down to fame. That's the only thing that matters, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, that's the first thing they test you with, right? Is like, have you ever played in L.A.? Do you know Jerry Seinfeld? It's like, that's the measuring. I'm like, no, I don't know Jerry. He's pretty good.
That's funny.
You know who I think's really funny? I love that. You know who I think's really funny? Bob Hope. Well, thanks for sharing.
Nobody's ever said that to you. Has that ever been said to you?
I've had people suggest some. Again, no one else does that. No one walks up to someone else in another profession and goes, TD Bank, you know what bank I like? Scotia. I like, that's a bank. I mean, that
is a bank.
They can bank. I mean, they can. I like their bank card better.
I like the blue. It's nice. Dude, I've said this to people a bunch of times. But it's weird because, you know, people talk about, like, we were already joking about some of the sadder parts of traveling around by yourself and all that sort of thing. But we also have to, and I'm putting this in entertainment-wise, we're the only group, I think, that has to see everybody else's promotions every day. Like, you and me know about comedians in England who get things, in Australia, you know? Same thing as the bank. They don't know who across the street just started making more money than them. They have no idea. It's them in the building and that's it. We hear about every single, like the amount of people come up and they're like, oh, there's this really funny new guy in Cleveland. I'm like, I don't care. I'm sure they are. What do you want from me? You know what I mean? I'm trying to make this work here for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. You're right. I never thought about that. You're right. We are constantly blasted with other people's press releases. Just kind of like,
absolutely.
So-and-so has just got a show on Netflix. So-and-so just got a new sitcom. So-and-so has just signed with this. And you're like, that doesn't help my mindset at all. Like,
and from all over the world, not just Calgary, not just New York, like every single place, you know, somebody puts out a comedy special in Saudi Arabia and we got to be like, God.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I got to get my.
I guess I'm garbage. I guess I suck. Tough, man. You know, we're really talking ourselves out of, maybe this whole thing is a blessing in disguise. Let's never go back to that trash life. Living like this most of the time, like on a plane, just bent over for 10 straight years.
This is a comedy, a retreat from comedy where we just kind of just sit and reevaluate. Yeah, I don't know, man. You just, it's like an addict. You're like, I don't know, man. I started 16 years ago and it just relieved the pain. And I met other guys who were doing it, you know, and it just validated my choices, you know?
And now, and then as soon as it shuts off, it's almost like a curse gets broken. You're like, what? It's like when Dracula's killed and all the other vampires wake up.
I almost feel like if I was to run into you at a festival or whatever, like I feel now almost like that where it's almost a survival game where like, man, we're still doing it. We made it. It's like when you see these apocalyptic movies and like you come out of the bunker and you're just looking around and it's nothing but smoldering ash and carnage. And then I just see you across the way. Like just, Trent?
Yeah.
I made it too. I'm still alive. Like I feel like comedy's like that. Like you actually have to survive it.
Yeah. I mean, that's you, me, or just about any other comedians that know each other, because eventually you stop seeing each other as much as you used to. And then when you do run into somebody at a festival, it is like, oh shit.
Yeah.
It's so great to see you that you're still, because then you hear the other stories and they're like, you hear about what's his name? He quit and now his life is way better.
I know. Those are the worst.
He's got a wife and kids and a pool. I mean, yeah. Yuck.
Sleep well and stuff. Yeah, he's doing good.
He's making money. He can go to the bank and they'll give him money. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, crazy, man. Yeah, so I don't talk to him anymore. But it was...
You can't have those people in your life.
You can't have those kids with real healthy lifestyles in there.
Yes. It's just like addicts, like you're saying. They can't hang out with people that are going to the gym all the time and working out. You got to live under the bridge. Shoot up. Keep writing stupid ideas on a napkin to scream at people that don't even want them.
You're not validating my life decisions with your responsibility and your groceries in your fridge. I don't even see that. I mean, what are you, mocking me?
Exactly.
But I feel like there's an aspect of that, because we both know people who were extremely talented who eventually were like, just woke up one day and were like, you know, there's other stuff out there. And there is. Way, you know? And
What would you do if you were going to go,
I'm done?
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know, because I've thought about it during this pause and pandemic. I'm like, Christ, what would I go back into? Like, would I try and still be in like a public speaking capacity or something? Because at least then you're still kind of performing a little bit. Or like, sometimes I look at people's jobs, and this is not to disrespect any job. Anybody who works for a living gets paid. I'm like, hats off to you, complete respect. But sometimes I look at people's faces who are doing a job and I know that they're like dead inside. They're just like, yeah, I do this. I don't like it. I hate it. I was at a Bottle Depot once. And
once, 10 times, whatever. Once. I collect the bottles in my neighborhood.
Maybe every week. So I'm at this place and the smell combined with the noise of bottles rattling, people's bottles, which are like Fausty and like just been sitting, and you're sitting there all day with these gloves on, with these counters that are rotten, and you're taking these bottles and putting them into boxes and then counting the numbers and putting them. And it's a job that needs to be done. And it's a job that deserves respect just as any other job does.
Yeah.
But I remember looking at this guy in the eyes and I went, is this going to be the rest of his life? Like, will this be, this is what I'm going to do until I can no longer do it and then I die. Now, maybe he loves it. Maybe deep down he's like, you know, it's good. We got a good crew here. We have a good time, whatever. But in my mind, I went, wow, like this guy gets up every day and this is his life. And I'm like,
yeah,
what would I do? Like if I can't be that guy, like I would go crazy.
Yeah, Bottle Depot wouldn't be, I personally wouldn't be able to deal with it, but yeah, you're right. There's definitely some people that can, for sure, like it, all that kind of stuff. I've had jobs that I really liked, man. When I was working at, A&W, I was young, like I was like 16, but I loved it. Starbucks was great for a while. But yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you one thing I would do. Twitter's gone. Facebook is gone. Instagram's gone, okay? And I probably moved to Thailand, right, where they don't even talk about this shit. Because here's the thing that I think, and maybe you're in the same way, because we've were broken in a good way.
Yeah.
If I was at an office, okay, and I'd gotten rid of all this, and like some say you're just back in an office or whatever, you're at the Bottle Depot. Let's say Bottle Depot. You're moving a bottle, and then somebody goes to you, hey, man, you see this comedian? He's really funny. And they show me a person I know sucks. I know they suck. They suck for years. But now, because, you know, they're up there, I would have to be like Batman and go, ugh, and I'd rip the bottle uniform off, and now I'm back into it. I would have to get back out there because I'd be like, you think that person's good? And I'd fucking get the cowl and go right back out. So I got to go to a place where there's nothing, it can't happen.
Right, where you're isolated and there's no stage, there's no yes. possibility of you just walking by sometime with your lady, like, is that comedy?
Exactly. Like, how many times do you think, I mean, Mike Tyson right now is trying to book a fight. He wants to fight. I mean, it's 56, whatever, maybe 54. But like, how many times in his life do you think, even over the last bunch of years, he's like, oh, I'm a peaceful guy and I'm doing these talks. How many times do you think when somebody says to him, hey man, have you seen this boxer? He's really good. Does he look at it and go,
right.
There's gotta be still a piece of him where he's like, you think that, you know what I mean? He's always going to have that thing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That drive will be. And then like, you're right. You're like, you think that guy can hit? That guy can throw a punch?
Yeah.
Get my body back. And he's just like up and like,
exactly. And
he is jacked right now. Like if you see,
he looks great. Of course. I love Mike Tyson.
Oh my God. Like he would destroy me. One punch right here would cave my chest in and I would just be a circle on the floor sucking in.
Oh yeah. 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 Nobody, I mean, not, especially if he fought somebody in his like age class. I don't even know if that's possible. I don't know if anybody other than him is keeping up with that. Well, there's gotta be somebody, but you know, he'd be, I'm sure, able to knock out most of the people around, you know, in his age group.
Well, you can't gain anything because you're like, if you're a young guy who's like up and coming and then you fight the guy who's in his mid 50s and lose, it's over for you. And
totally. It's like Larry Holmes.
Yeah. And who else
fighting
is
Muhammad Ali,
in category who's like, yeah, I'm also physically fit and I want to get in with a new lean, mean, hungry
yeah.
Take a pass on that. I'm good.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, Larry Holmes, I think, fought Muhammad Ali when Muhammad Ali was like 36, and everybody was like, he might have been older, I'm not sure, but everybody was like, Jesus, this is just he just beat the fuck out of Ali and it did nothing for him.
Right.
Yeah, Tyson would be the exact same sort of deal, and he's 20 years older almost, but he looks like he's in way better shape than Ali was at 36. I mean, now we're just talking.
It's so funny because I had a premise that I was thinking about over the last couple of months, but of course, you know, there's no stage to try it on, was about how I'm not a big fan of old timer hockey games. Like, I don't want to watch somebody who was once great go out there and putter around the ice. You know, I'm like, I want to remember them as the great one. I don't want to see him as the gout one. I don't want to see a guy who's now, and then the next thing you know, Tyson's like, I want to start boxing. Because I was going to use that as the example. Like, you don't see that with boxing. Like, just a bunch of guys, like 60-year-old boxers, like, for charity. And they're just in
this
way. And then all of a sudden, Tyson's like, hold my beer. I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. And he looks great. And he looks like he would really, really destroy some people.
Just destroy people. Dude, like, when you look back at when you started stand-up, because I often think about this, like, it's impossible for someone to tell me what my road was going to be. Like, I did get into it just because it was fun. Like, legitimately, as you said earlier, I didn't look at it like a career. At first, it was like, man, this feels really good to make other people laugh. And I get to hang out with other people who think like me. And it was almost like you were accepted into this new world of people that validated, you know, your kind of thinking and stuff. But I would never have imagined like the ups and downs and like the heartbreak. And so when I talk to comedians now who are getting frustrated by the business or whatever, I'm like, man, you don't really fully appreciate how much of a marathon
this is.
Like, do you sit back sometimes and think about that? Like when you started and what you didn't know and what you thought it was gonna be? Like, you ever sit and think about that?
Yeah, for sure. I try to definitely right now in this whole time, you kind of go, well, it sort of is what it is, as stupid as that is to say. And you go, let's say you did have to take some kind of 3-year break. Let's just say, I don't know what that is. You could do it again in 3 years if you really wanted to, you know. You can't fight what the whole deal is. And people have done some pretty great things very young, and people have done some very great things older, man. Like, there is no, I think we kind of get it into our head too when you start that it's if you don't do something by the time you're 30, you might as well just drink battery acid and throw yourself down a flight of stairs. But that's, it's hard to not think that sometimes, but it's completely insane. It's just a wild, stupid thought. But yeah, for sure. There's so many things when you first start, nobody can tell. Even when I first moved to New York and people would ask me, hey, how's it going and all that sort of thing. The only thing I thought before I came to New York, and I was like, okay, it's going to be hard because I got to start over basically. And I don't have friends that I have back home. But there's so many other things I didn't even factor in that you can only feel once you do it. You can't even really explain it to anybody, you know? But yeah, you're right. When you first start, you can't. How could you possibly know, even without this, all the things that would be up, down, all the things you'd have to deal with? I mean, it's impossible.
Well, I think it's amazing because so many comedians talk about, they get frustrated, right? Like, into a certain club, or hey, that is the hot show in town and I can't get on there. And I keep telling people, like, it doesn't end. Like, there's no level you get to where all the doors open and you're just accepted and everything you want, you get. Like, if you don't sign on for that now, then you might as well quit. Because there's you're thinking you're going to get to a point where, like, every club is booking you, every show wants you on it, everyone thinks you're hilarious. It doesn't exist. So, like, if you can get that out of your head, then you just go, okay, I do what I do. I work hard. I put shit out there. And then I move on to the next thing. But people, I don't know, there's this myth out there that somehow there's this certain door you unlock and suddenly there it is. You did it. You get everything. It doesn't.
I know. No, it doesn't. I mean, did shows once with, okay, well, we're just two men talking. No, you know, very famous comedian. Okay. Super famous comedian. All right. Man has everything. We're talking houses, cars, women. We're talking all of it. Okay. We're in the green room of a club and a trailer for a movie comes on and he goes, they put that guy in movies and they don't put me in movies. And then went on a 10-minute rant about how he can't get, and that was one of those times where I'm sitting there going, it doesn't stop. It does not stop. This person has on my end, all of it, but in their head, so you're right. It's one of those things you just have to like somehow the process of the whole deal. And
I think you're a lot like me. Like, you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but like, I think you and I both enjoy the process, like the daily ritual of being a comedian. Like, I like sitting down with my ideas. I like trying to flush them out. I like trying to figure out why this word won't work or whatever. Like, yes, I love the adrenaline of performing in a live audience and all that, but I love that minutia of things. So that saved me, because if I had to like hang all my happiness on this festival thinks you're awesome and this, you've been chosen for this, then like I wouldn't be doing this anymore, because that comes and goes. But I think I'm fortunate enough to love that day-to-day stuff of being a comedian. And I would say you're the same way. Am I right? Or?
Yeah, no, as far as like writing things and really putting stuff together, for sure. If I was working at the Bottle Depot, I would still be writing down ideas on breaks and stuff at the Bottle Depot. I was doing that before I even did any of this. I'm sure you did too, at jobs and stuff that you had and in school. So yeah, you're right, that part of it. And the other thing is, if you're going to get frustrated and bitter because you're not here or there or all that kind of stuff, even if you are still doing it, you're not doing it. Because everybody else around you hates that. That gets, you know, nobody goes up with that mentality. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it happen too much anywhere where people rise as they, I hate this, I hate that, fuck these people, all that kind of shit. Like, you can't live in that world and go up. So once you start even living there, you might as well just lay down, because you know, you're making it real hard for yourself.
Well, I think you're right too. It's like the people who make the least amount of excuses seem to rise the quickest and the steadiest. Now, it's not that you won't have pitfalls, and there's not that there's not frustrations, but the people who sit around with the excuses and like, oh, he just got that because, or where's my da da da, like, you're right. Those people generally don't get to a certain level of success. And even success, like the thing I've been thinking a lot about during this break is that people don't talk about this in comedy. I don't know why, but just the happiness aspect of it. Like, dude, if you're not happy doing this, then don't do it anymore. Like, but people sit around like, oh, can you believe this shit? And I can't believe it, whatever. And I can't get booked at this. Like, you're not happy. You don't have to do this. You can walk out, like leave your pen and your notepad. Absolutely. And walk out the door. But they feel like, well, I got to do this now. It's what I do. It's like, well, shut up then. And just
exactly. Yeah.
And take the backpack of troubles that we all have and just sign up. Like,
yeah. When people start complaining about other people's specials or who's funny and who's not funny and all that sort of deal. Yeah. I try to stay away from that, man, because it's, I might, you know, to friends,
right.
Critique stuff, but yeah. I am not walking into just any old room and sitting down and being like, you know who sucks? Or like, can you believe, like, what are we doing here? Why? I don't, none of this, I don't care. I and just don't
it,
care.
And I treat it like restaurants. It's like, I'm making a certain kind of food. You make a certain kind of food.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of sushi. Someone else doesn't like steak. This place got a great burger. But everybody's comedy is just different. So if something works and someone has a following or an audience, you can't deny that. You can't be like,
yeah, you can't.
Oh,
yeah.
This guy is only whatever. It's like, look, whatever he's doing resonates with a certain group of people. You can't deny that. I don't care if you don't like it. You could not like it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not for you. And if everybody was the same, this whole thing would have flopped years ago. Like, we wouldn't have even had a chance to do this. If everybody had been Ellen, and that's nothing against Ellen at all, but if every single person had been the exact same, Jesus, man, you and me would be at the Bottle Depot right now talking about those old tapes of the Ellens. You know what I mean?
Ellen tapes are, she was edgy. That was,
it's also sort of a young thing to do, either young in the business or young in like
mindset,
mentality of just sitting around being like, this sucks and that sucks and this person stinks and how the fuck did they blah, blah, blah. I mean, clearly you're either not an adult or you haven't been here long enough to understand how some of this has nothing to do with funny at all. And that's another thing. You just got to go. That's like any job. You know how many people are in their job right now that are like, that guy got a promotion, but I'm fucking better than him. Mm-hmm. These things happen. It is what it is. But you know what I mean? You have to kind of figure out why that is, not just sit there in a break room eating coffee, screaming about a guy.
Pete Holmes refers to it as you had to be careful of comedy cancer. That's what he calls it. Like surrounding yourself with those people who are in the back of the room, like shitting on everybody else and bitching and moaning about what they don't have, because it's contagious. And when you surround yourself with those people, you become that person, bitter and angry. And it's like, at the end of the day, man, it's like everyone's just on their own journey. And the other thing too I find amazing, especially with comedians, is that we're very dismissive of other people's hard work and sacrifice to get to. So once they get something, it's like, can you believe this shit? It's like, yeah, but did you know what they've done to get to that point? And they actually wrote a script. They didn't just talk about it over beers. They actually got up the next day and typed a script. You know what I mean? How many comedians just go like, you know what we should do? And then it's just, it never ever is executed. No one ever does it. It's just like, yeah, can you believe this shit? Yeah, because they got up the next day.
Right. And started doing it. Yeah.
Do it for reals. Like,
and also when people start talking about like a lot of most comedians, maybe I'm wrong, most comedians that people know are over 35.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, that's pretty accurate.
Like there's definitely some under for sure. But generally speaking, it is a long ass fucking time.
Yep.
And then people finally see a person. They're like, oh shit, this is great. So you're right. Nobody necessarily, maybe one or two people has gotten on a stage one time and then had everything given to them. Like it just, you know, that's not the way that it works. It is years and years of work that, yeah, people just go, fuck them. Okay. Yes. Done things. Even if, yeah. Like you said, if you don't like it, my God, how are you going to like everything? How could you possibly, you know, but somebody does. So what the hell's your problem?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing too, is that people like, I don't know. I just sometimes have these moments of like gratitude for it all where I'm like, it's insane yeah. that this is a job. Like yeah. I go to a room where people often don't know who you are and they pay their money and they sit quietly in the dark while I sit on an, while I'm on an elevated stage with bright lights and a stick to amplify my voice and they go, here's my money. Tell me what you think about things. Like this is yep. a job in the world.
That's what I'm saying. It's pure magic. It truly is. It's truly magic. I do try to think of that every once in a while of like, and I guess same as you, you go, because we all do get frustrated sometimes and go like, fuck. But then you go, God damn it, man. I'm doing this for a while. It's the only way that I buy things.
Yeah.
I live in New York. I like this seagull picture. You know, it's like, you know, yeah. could be worse, as stupid as that sounds to say.
Mm-hmm. But I've said it to people all the time, like, you know, you're frustrated where you are in your career and you wish you were at this level or have these opportunities. And I'm like, do you know how many comics would trade with you tomorrow?
Yeah.
Who would go, I'll take your New York apartment. I will take the ins that you have in your scene. I will take the credits that you've already accumulated. Yep. You know, but we're always looking forward because that's the way we're trained to go next, next, next. We don't ever set, look back and go, shit, like that's been a ride. Like I've done all right. You know
what I mean? Like, no, exactly. You know, yeah.
Someone else was like, I can't get on the open mic that you headline. I can't even get on it. I come here every week for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever see?
I come in a blizzard and dust the snow off my shoulders and they go, no. Okay. And I turn around, you know, like.
Of course I do. Well, remember when you first kind of started, we were all like, you know, when you first start, you're like, you look at just the famous people. But then when you do start, you look at the kind of people that are famous in your scene, right? What I'm trying to say to you is, Trent, and not that we're that, but we're not, you know, we're not yep. Seinfeld, but there's a group of people behind us that we don't even know that are exactly what you're saying in the pure sludge that we once were in, and they would murder us, yeah. kill us,
yes, yes,
to be there, you know, kill us, absolutely kill us.
Yeah.
So you're right, it's hard to realize that sometimes, but yeah, I think that's a real important thing for sure.
Well, dude, I've heard like, you know, big names on podcasts and people are talking about their credits and stuff and you've had an amazing career and it's like, this guy's playing arenas. And then the person goes, well, actually I don't play arenas yet. I mean, I'm playing theaters, but like, you know what I mean? Like that's at every level. So the guy who's selling out 5,000 seat casinos and theaters is still somewhat pissed that he's not playing Madison Square Garden. You know what I mean? So like,
and then I'm sure somebody does Madison Square Garden and I'm like, it was only two nights.
It was two nights.
Somebody did four, you know.
Residency.
I'm not Billy Joel. He's been there for 6 years every day.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Kevin Hart's like, I'm going to one-up that and play an outdoor football stadium. Like, it doesn't end. Like, there's going to be moon shows at some point. Like, people are going to be like,
yeah.
I got some Earth shows, so that's on one side of my webpage, and then I got moon shows. I'm actually doing shows on the moon, and someone's like, that guy's got moon shows.
I'm on Jupiter. How the hell do I get to the moon?
My Pluto people gonna be there in July. Like,
it's not even a planet anymore. I don't know what it is. Nebula. Dude, speaking of that, people not caring about things, and this is even internally, somebody told me a story of like, in New York, obviously people drop around all the places, you know, so you end up seeing everybody. But somebody told me a story of Kevin Hart was in like a real small club in the city, holds like 90 people. And obviously he walks on, people erupt, he crushes, he comes off, and this guy was standing by the door by his wife. And Kevin Hart walks up to his wife and he's like, he goes, what'd you think? And she looks up from her phone and goes, huh? Like, she's over it.
Yeah.
You're like, it never, you know what I mean? It's not ever going to be like,
She's like, can we go get pizza now? Like, I
exactly.
can't.
She's seen it enough that, like, she's like, what? Excuse me? So, yeah, this the whole idea of, like, one day you'll get to some kind of, no, it's a, I guess, an ongoing thing for life.
What do you feel like the move to New York, I can guesstimate what it would do for you comedically, but, like, what do you feel has been the biggest advantage of moving to New York City and being in that world? How would you say, I mean, because you've been there a long time, like when you say 9 years now, I go, well, I mean, that's a lot of time to change anyway and grow as a comedian. But if you take yourself out of where you were and then you go to New York City, where do you think, if you were to go like, yeah, here were the advantages of moving to New York City and applying my craft there?
I guess one big one is you can do more of it. You know, like you can just do a bunch of sets here in the city and like good ones, you know, in front of big crowds that want to be there. You can also make money here every week, like in the city, where the only place you could do that kind of is in Toronto, and you can't do that in Toronto. Like, you know, you might be able to, you can't do the guest spot at Yuck Yucks every week.
Right.
Can't do it, and there's not enough clubs to, like, but you know, you can make money here every week without leaving the city, which is good. And then also, again, like I was just saying, you kind of run into people that you've never ever run into in other cities, like in Canada, I guess. You know, that's the only other, like in Toronto, you're not going to see on a weekly basis, you know, literally the best comedians trying things out.
Yeah.
And just being around them and seeing stuff, you know?
I really believe that. Like, I was at the Winnipeg Festival last May. And I was hosting the gala, and Tom Papa was closing. And dude, I really believe this. Like, I believe I've seen it in my own career. I really feel like when you watch someone who's really, really good at the craft, I think you're a better comedian for having been in the room. Like,
yeah.
To watch someone who's a technician and do what they do. And their style might be completely different to what you do or the topics you talk about. But I think when you watch something done at a high level and you're actually in the room watching it, you're a better comedian when you leave. I don't know if you believe that, but I believe that.
Yeah, for sure. Because you see kind of like what's possible. And, you know, the whole thing of like, you can watch a special and all that kind of stuff, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. Being in the same room as this person, and is the thing. So you're right. If you're in a place where they are doing the thing, yeah, I think it makes you better. At least just by showing you what is possible.
Because I get into the technical stuff of it, and I don't really talk to this to people who are not comedy geeks per se. But like, I'll obsess about stuff like speed.
Yeah.
Timing and like small things. Like I was watching some specials, just quick starts of specials the other day, like just watching the first 10 minutes. I was just looking at like mic technique. Like I was just looking at like, where'd they hold it? And like, oh, that person keeps it in the stand and this other person keeps it down here. And I'm watching rhythm. Like I absorb all of that. And I've always been that way since I started. I love taking in all that data of how everyone does it differently and, or a premise that someone uses or the wording of a joke. And I go, I would not have worded it that way. I would have went this way with it. I love all that stuff still after 16 years. So there's so much to learn. Like you never feel like, oh, I got it figured out now. I know. You know?
Yeah, no, for sure, man. It never is. I mean, he talks about that in the documentary Comedian. But Seinfeld talking about how, you know, he gets 5 minutes sort of grace to go on because he's a super famous man that everybody loves, but then past that nobody cares. Not that I don't care, but it's still got to be,
yeah,
you know.
What do you think about this whole thing about, I've talked to some comedians about the concept of the hour and the hour special. Do you feel maybe that people are putting them out too quick now? Some people argue that, again, people are just putting them out, they sign a deal, they got to put out so many specials in so many years, whatever. And it's like, some people argue that, oh yeah, that one wasn't that great, or because, you know, he put it out so quick after the other thing. like, what's your belief on this whole putting specials out and the rate at which people are doing them now? Like, they're putting them out. Oh yeah, every second year I got a special, or every year I have a special. Or if you're Dave Chappelle, it's like, yeah, every couple months I got a special.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, I'm a man personally that has about, I think you've seen them all. I've got eight.
Yeah.
I've got eight out. I numbered the first ones are 1, 2, 3, 4, and then doing it again, back to the kitchen. Now we're cooking, all set up. So check those out wherever you check out the specials. What's that?
Great plug. It was a good plug for the for the vinyl set that you can buy now at Time Life Books.
Back to the Kitchen is personally my favorite one.
I love the seventh one. I thought that was your best stuff. You know,
we're really cooking now. Yeah, that
something's burning. I think that one was called Something's Burning, and it's just you going like you're smelling something burning.
I don't know, man. Obviously, like people go through so much stuff that content is never even. It's not even sort of an issue anymore. You know, there's so many things that people just eat stuff up. So I don't even know if it would seem to people that don't really, really care, for lack of a better term, about stand-up. I don't know if they really look at it as like, oh, this could have been better, or that could have been, you know, I think they just look at it as, oh shit, somebody that I like has put it on another thing.
Right.
So to them, go ahead.
I was just saying, I look at it more for myself, because I've only,
yeah.
I put it like, yeah, the Comedy Now thing, and I did my own special a couple of years back, and I'm like, now I kind of regret not doing more stuff, because I feel like I haven't documented the different yeah. stages of my career, you know, like where capture that period and that material, and then it's done, and then you move on to writing your next thing. So less of a, like a commercial vibe, and this is going to make me money. It's like, I just like to have the archive of like, that's where I was in my career at that time.
Yeah.
It was the best I had. And then just having something to kind of like document that arc of your career. That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Totally. I think I've lost tons of things to kind of being too precious about it and thinking that it wasn't ready to, you know, be somewhere or any of that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is that a Canadian thing, do you think?
I think it definitely more so, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. We ask for nothing and we don't think we're good enough at all. Somebody told me once, man, again, I won't say his name, but I'll tell you when we're done, whatever. But he's a fantastic comedian from Canada. And I told him one time at Just for Laughs, I was like, dude, because he was talking about maybe moving to the States. I was like, you should, man. Like, you're fucking great, you know? You're fantastic. And he's like, oh, I don't know, man. I'm just kind of okay. I'm like, you know, he's like, I do stuff and people like it, blah, blah, blah. And I just freaked out. And I'm guilty of that all the time. And I'm sure you are too. But when you hear somebody else do it, it's easier to go, don't fucking do this. There's so much garbage everywhere. And we might be the only group of people that's like, but am I good enough for, like, we're judging ourselves against the best.
Right.
You know, so we go, well, I'm garbage compared to that. But then there's, I don't know, here doesn't have that at all. Most people are just like confident and fucking dick sure and going, you know, and everything is terrific.
Well, dude, like, some people do really too. Like, there's American comics that I'd work with, and whether I was down there or they came through Canada, and the guy did like, you know, 15 minutes, and at the end of the night, guys opening up a small shop. Dude's got t-shirts, CDs, buttons, bumper stickers, whatever. And a guy did 15 minutes, and he's like, "Here's my album." I'm like, "Album?" And he's like, "They've adopted the full business side of being a comedian." And meanwhile, the headliner, who was from Canada, who destroyed the room, is literally already at the bar next door with a pint of beer.
I know.
They're not even trying to. And I'm like, where does that come from? Where did we like become these people who just want to, yeah, it was kind of okay. And you know, some people like my stuff. It's like, you would never operate any other business with that mentality. Like, I'm going to open up a steak restaurant. I'm not going to put up a sign. I mean, it's too pretentious. If people come in, they come in.
Dude, that's how we operate the entire country. That's the whole thing. Coast to coast.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's good. You know,
when
other people are like, Canada's so nice. I'm like, I guess.
It's nice. I mean, we're okay. I mean, it's no,
okay.
You know, it's no Belize. but it's, it's all right. I like it. I mean, I'll never leave, but.
It's our mentality that definitely bleeds into comedy, and it makes it tough in the world of you should always be yelling about yourself and always be sort of putting things out and, never speaking about yourself in any sort of bad light publicly or never looking at what you do and be like, ugh. Even if you are doing a club and it's half full, people will make that look good. And they can. There is a way to look at that as a positive way. Yeah. There are people here. But I think a lot of us would be like, ugh, fucking bullshit, And then tweet or text or type or whatever the fuck about, oh, there was only 20 people there tonight. I just suck my own dick for an hour in front of nobody.
Yeah, find a way to just rain more on your parade. But the other thing I find even doubly more concerning about all that is not only will we not do it, we will dump on the people that do it. Like,
I know.
I remember the first time I had merch and some other comic went, really? Like I was selling out because I was like trying to pay for my gas from here to Regina with like
selling. There is a part of that though, right? That's like, do you have that part a little bit inside if you see somebody else do it, There is a part of me where it goes, but I get it. I get it. I understand. But there is a part where you go, oh, come on, man.
But I think that's because it makes us uncomfortable that we know we're not doing it. Like,
yeah, that's part of it.
I should be trying to extend my business and extend my reach. And that's what that guy's doing. And it's a mirror that reveals that I'm not doing it. And that makes me uncomfortable. So it's easier to just shit on that guy as opposed to going like, yeah, actually, man, how much did you pay for those t-shirts? And like that guy could be like, yeah, man, I got a great guy who makes t-shirts. And the next thing I was telling another comic, the first time I had t-shirts, I was in, I think Regina, Saskatchewan or something. And I literally, dude, was at the back of the room with the shirt and it was, I couldn't make eye contact with people. I was like, yeah, you probably got enough shirts at home. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to buy it. I was like apologetic.
Of course.
It was just like,
of course.
Why even do it if you're going to be like, you don't have to.
A friend of mine here makes fun of me for that all the time. He's like, and this isn't an always thing, but he's like, you're the only guy I know that will go up and kill and then apologize to the crowd for it, Because I'll go up with a mic and I'm screaming and everything, and then I'll kind of stop and be like, okay, good night, everybody. And he's like, what the fuck is that last part? He gets so mad at me. He's like, why the fuck do you make it seem like you just bothered these people for a bunch of minutes? And I'm like, I don't know, it's embarrassing. I'm just up here yelling things. And there is a part of it that is, I think that is very Canadian of us for sure.
Yeah, you're right. Like almost, I've taken up too much of your time.
Yes.
You probably want to see other people now. I've been up here just talking and they're like, no, we love this guy. Like you got to say that. I understand that.
Yes. I've talked myself into that sometimes of like somebody books you for some kind of TV thing. And you're like, well, they need people. So
They need people,
and I'm one of the names.
Eventually they're going to get to you. Dude, that was the thing. That was the thing they would say about comedy now all the time was, I mean, if you just last long enough, I mean, you're going to get one. Like, that's how they would diminish the accomplishment of getting it. Like, well, I mean, just stay alive, and I mean, you're going to kill you with something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so funny, really, man.
You're not going to say there's any talent involved or any.
Just being a people.
Be a people who's, checking your email. I mean, if you're one of those.
I really have had that thought, though. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Well, they probably, they just.
Yeah, someone else can't.
They needed a people.
I do qualify as a people and.
But that's one of those things that like it's you don't want to go the other way with it where you you're wearing sunglasses and a feather boa with your name tattooed in your own chest, but like there's a medium where you don't hate yourself and apologize for being alive and then the feather boa tattoo chest person.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I talked to Henry Sir on this podcast too, and Henry's in New York. I don't know if you bump into him much down there, but it's like he said the same thing. He goes like, he was feeling kind of down and like, man, things aren't happening as fast as I'd like. And he goes, and then he had some other comic remind him of what he's done. And he goes, it was the weirdest thing. Like, if someone told me those things about somebody else, I'd go, man, that yes. guy's crushing it.
Yeah.
It's like, but 100%. Like, me, everything was diminished. Everything was like, yeah, but that's just because, or.
Yep.
You know what I mean? He's like,
Of course, I do.
So where's the joy? Well, when are you going to be
happy? There is no joy here, dude. This is not what this is, okay? You think they walked across the desert for 40 years for joy? No. They hated themselves. No, but dude, I've said that exact sentence. What did you, fuck, what was the sentence you just said? Well, that's because, or something like that. I've done that so many times.
I mean, I just hosted. It wasn't. What? Gotham asked you to host? But they could get someone off the street to host, I guess.
I've done it before, no joke, with being Canadian. You know, I'll go like, well, they probably need Canadians.
I'm one of those
so that you get in there and now you're all set up. It's a bad way to live, but it's a tough one not to, because we also as a whole country view the one I'm sitting in right now as the better one in all aspects except for how they run things,
right?
But other than that, you know, I've said this a million times, if Lil Wayne hadn't have found Drake would be in Dundas Square rapping to nobody. And people would be like, I mean, is this good?
Right.
I don't know. Is that good? And then America is like, we love it. And then Canada's like, we love it. We love it too.
He's one of ours.
I also love it. That's perfect.
And he's Canadian.
Perfect, you love it. And he's Canadian. Yeah. But when he's up there just fucking singing to himself, people are like, ah. Every single person with an eagle in their passport, Canada looks at as a better entertainer than any single person who has a fucking maple leaf in their passport.
Right. It's like, you have to be anointed by America first to be appreciated. And it's funny, it was American comics that would come up here and they'd do a spot, you know, and the host is like, hey man, I'm going to be bringing you up. What did you want for an introduction? And the American comic would go, just tell them I'm from LA. And it's like,
yeah,
but that's not a credit. Like, that's just
it is, though. In Canada, that's a credit.
Ooh, this guy's from LA. That doesn't mean anything.
From a place doesn't mean a goddamn thing.
Here's where I get mail. Just tell them where I get mail.
To give them my zip code. 90210. That's right.
I said 902. This guy's from that zip code. Like, it's
that's how people bring me up here a lot. Not now, but when I first got here, they'd be like, this guy's from Canada. And I'd always say that when I got on, like, as if that's some kind of credit.
Dude, I used to do that when I was trying to get gigs. When I was trying to get gigs in the U.S., I used to email bookers and tell them my whole story about, I am Canadian. I can legally work in your country. They're like, just send us a clip, dude. I have secured legal assistance. They're just like, is this guy planning to live in the club? I don't know. Why is he?
Yeah, no, I know. It's very, I don't know.
In this book, like, just taking like probably 100 emails a day from comics just looking to get work. And this Canadian guy is like, I need to tell you my plight. The winters here are harsh.
Exactly.
He's like, just send us a clip, dude.
Just send a clip.
I don't care if you're from Lincoln, Nebraska.
We'll watch the comedy, and that's what we're gonna base it on. Yeah, it's a real Canadian thing way to be. You know,
which is
good and bad. It's good. It's good and bad.
Well, I think you're right. I learned that a bunch of years ago too. Like, just not even so much with the Canadian thing, but just a level of, I think to feel somewhat happy doing stand-up, you have to care, but not care too much. So that means, like, when you go out with material or whatever, it's like, yeah, I'm hoping you like it, but I'm also fine if you don't like it, because I'm working through it, or I like it. Like, you're not, you know, like, I need these people to like, when you first started, I think that's the way I was anyway. Like, I needed that validation all the time. But you get to a sweet spot with stand-up where you're like, nah, I'm fine. Like, if this doesn't hit with every single person, so you care, but you don't care too much, if that makes any sense.
Of course, yeah. You can't have. Not everything. Not everybody's gonna like everything. That'd be you'd be balloons.
Yeah.
At that point in time, you know, or fireworks.
Blowing around in the wind. All right, I'm gonna wrap this up. I got the last question for you. I don't ask all the guests.
Okay.
I ask the majority of them, and I'm going to ask you this: pizza or pop? No. What is Aero bars or Kit?
You gonna say pizza or pie? Was that what that was gonna be?
Sure.
Those two things don't even. And that's pizza every time. I'll answer it for you right now. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Is pizza a pie? No. What is the biggest misconception people have had about you? And then what is the truth? And you can take a second to think about it.
Me as a human person? Me, myself?
As a human person, as opposed to an animal person.
a mammal? I don't know. I think probably because of the way that I do stand up, people think I'm like maybe an angry person, you know? Because like I yell things and like it's pretty loud. But this is just the way that I vent things. But the truth is, I'm not... I don't live angrily, you know? I smile a lot. I like stuff. I like stuff. I'm not like an angry person, even though I am, you know, my comedy is that to a degree. So, yeah, I'll go with that.
It's a hard sell for people, like when you don't know a comedian off stage, and quite often when they meet you, they expect that same guy.
Yeah.
You're very different off stage. It's like, yeah, that's a very magnified version of me and amplified. I can't be that guy. Do you know how annoying that guy would be off stage?
It's just like,
I'm going to give my opinions and I'm going to act everything. You're like, we're at an Earl's. Can you just sit down? I'm trying to have a salad. Like just
totally, man. I mean, nobody's worse than the people who just can't shut it off ever. You know, it's literally the absolute, like you're talking about driving around with somebody for a long time and they're that person that cannot, making jokes about road signs. Buddy, put your head through the windshield. Nobody thinks you're cute. That's trash. Just stop it. We're adults who pay tax. Can we please just treat ourselves like real people for a little bit?
You know, the show is not till 8, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The show's not till 8 o'clock.
Cool,
we're
cool,
just,
dude.
Just you and us, right? Like, I'm also a comedian. So,
well, that place is called Weird Lake. Uh-huh.
Are you going to try and sell me merch? You're not going to try and sell me merch.
In the car, he puts it on the dashboard. I got medium, large.
2 for $20, Trent. 2 for $20. Hey, I'm driving. 2 for $20, bro. Well, dude, man, it was great catching up with you, dude.
Man.
I hadn't talked to you since Halifax, I don't think, from the festival a couple years back, probably.
Like 2014 or something?
Yeah, it's been a while. So
Jesus.
It's crazy. So I'm glad you're well. I'm glad you're safe and healthy. And hopefully I will bump into you again. I hope to get down to New York at some point and do some spots and whatnot. So.
Sweet, man. Yeah, it was great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. There it is. My chat with Nathan McIntosh. So good to catch up with that guy, find out what he's up to. Glad he's doing well. And that's it for this episode. Please subscribe to the Generators Podcast if you have not already done so. Leave us a review if you'd like. Also, you can share the episode, tell your friends about it. Getting the word out there in any way you can would really, really be appreciated. I hope you have a fantastic week, and I'll see you next week with another episode of TGP. See you.